Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. A new study of users of rural wireless internet suggests investment in new mobile technology is essential for economic development and quality of life in non-urban regions of the U.S. The study indicates that a failure to address the increasing urban-rural digital divide could cause less populated regions to fall further behind cities. Researchers from the University of South Dakota and Old Dominion University in Virginia surveyed rural South Dakota residents in the second half of last year to get their perception of the coverage capacity and speed of internet access. Joining us this morning to discuss the study, we have Dr. Robert McNabb. He's professor of economics at Old Dominion University and director of the Dragas Center for Economic Analysis and Policy. Robert, welcome to In the Moment.
Thank you very much.
Also joining us from the campus of the University of South Dakota, Dr. David Ernest. He is Odine Swanson Distinguished Professor of Political Science and director of the W.O. Farber Center for Civic Leadership. Welcome, David. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Lori.
Let's start with you, Dr. Ernest, and tell me how this collaboration and this partnership sort of came together in the first place.
Well, like so many interesting studies, it was happenstance and accident. I was in Washington, D.C. last May, and I was at an alumni event. And one of our alumni was telling me that legislators on Capitol Hill are increasingly concerned about the urban-rural divide. And a light bulb went off in my head, and I knew I had colleagues in Virginia who were excellent at economic analysis, so I reached out to them and said, hey, let's do a study.
Robert McNabb, tell me a little bit about what you do and the advantages, or you know, is it a natural partnership to partner with the University of South Dakota? Give us a little background, please.
Yes. One of the things we do here at the Dragas Center for Economic Analysis and Policy is we look at national, state, and local issues in public finance and in economic development. So this was just a natural question, especially given that we have a substantial urban-rural digital divide in Virginia that we've been looking at already.
All right. Tell us a little bit about the process and what you were looking for. How did you sort of roll out some of these questions? Dr. Ernest, let's start with you there.
Well, I think we really approached this in two respects. One was a sort of a macro-level economic analysis of the state of the economy in South Dakota and how individuals, both in urban and rural area, are doing economically. But we also wanted to get the individual stories about experiences with rural broadband and particularly wireless rural broadband. So we conducted survey studies here in Vermilion and elsewhere around South Dakota, as well as a couple of neighboring counties in Iowa and in Nebraska, because we really wanted to talk to individuals and hear about their experiences and their concerns.
Let me guess, they had some stuff to say.
They did. You know, the study, I think, makes a very interesting point that they expressed a lot of concerns, but on the other hand, they expressed sort of, you know, we get by, we make do,
right.
Which is, of course, very much a South Dakota attitude. We make do given difficult circumstances. But as the study shows, just getting by and making do isn't a solution for closing the rural divide.
Let's look at that big picture for a moment. Robert McNabb, tell us a little bit about the South Dakota economy and how it's sort of changing.
Yes, if you think about the perception across much of the United States about South Dakota, what comes to mind typically is agriculture and Mount Rushmore. But if you actually delve into how the South Dakota economy has evolved over the last two decades, you would see the rise of the financial services sector, the rise of education and health, and agriculture, while still important, decline in relative importance to those sectors. So the rapid growth in, for example, the Sioux City metropolitan area has been led by changes in the law that made credit card companies move operations to South Dakota, which, of course, has had all these positive spillover benefits upon the economy of South Dakota for the Sioux Falls metro area and to a little lesser extent, the Rapid City metropolitan area.
And are those networks keeping up with sort of that transition? David Ernest, what did you find out?
Well, what the study shows is that investment in broadband technologies, both fixed and mobile, is doing quite well in the urban areas of South Dakota, in both Rapid City and in Sioux Falls. But what we found was there is a distinct underinvestment in those technologies in rural areas, pretty much everywhere else in the state. And as the study gets into, there are some real economic reasons for that. There are considerable expenses to the creation of the investment and in building of these technologies. And in rural areas, there oftentimes isn't a large enough subscriber base to justify those investments. So one of the challenges is how do we incentivize investments in mobile broadband when the subscriber base is more favorable in urban areas versus in rural counties?
Are we seeing that impact already? You know, let's talk about the divide as it currently exists. Dr. McNabb?
Well, if you look at internet speed in the South Dakota county level, if we look at who has the fastest access, who has relatively slow access, you would see, for example, Dewey County in South Dakota has zero what is defined as broadband coverage, 25 megabytes down, 3 megabytes up. In the latest report that we have from December 2018, there are zero connections there. If we look at the most, Harding County, for example, has 100% coverage. If we look at it by metropolitan area, then you would see Sioux Falls has more broadband coverage and higher availability of speeds within the metropolitan area than many counties that are surrounding the Sioux Falls and also Rapid City's metropolitan area. So we see this persistent urban-rural digital divide, and as David mentioned, it is very hard to recoup the costs of fixed broadband investment because as you move outside the more populated areas of the state, while installation costs per mile drop because it is cheaper in terms of land, the low population density means that the unit cost per user increases substantially. So there is a disincentive for companies to attempt to roll out broadband to the entire state through fixed line investments.
And I want to get to this idea of why that matters, you know, other than, hey, you know, my Netflix is slower. But this has an economic impact and a social impact. David Ernest, what sort of stories were people telling you?
The more interesting stories were not so much about economic opportunity, but really about quality of life issues. So we heard some rather distressing stories about individuals who are incapable of accessing emergency services in dire circumstances because they couldn't get a connection on their phone. But we learned about the many, many different ways South Dakotans use mobile broadband, from marketing of agricultural products to government services to distance education. Many South Dakota students rely on broadband access to take courses and earn credits at USD. So there are innumerable ways that this technology improves the quality of life, but of course that means the lack of access severely impairs the quality of life.
Are there problems with geography or topography? Are there other things, or is it mostly a demographic, like a population center that's the problem? What are some of the challenges overall, Dr. McNabb?
Well, obviously, geography and topography, as you mentioned, pose challenges to running fixed-line investments and, of course, building cell towers. But at the end of the day, if you look at the Denver metropolitan area, for example, which is fairly flat but surrounded by mountainous terrain, where there's large population density there, there's very good coverage, and then it drops off there. We see this repeated throughout the United States, that along the interstates and in major metropolitan areas, you have relatively good broadband coverage, whether by fixed or mobile. But as soon as you start migrating out and population density drops dramatically, the economic incentive to roll out broadband is much less than in urban areas. So, yes, topography is obviously a challenge, given mountains and other items which require more mobile towers for the same amount of coverage. But if you have enough population there, then you get the investment.
Interesting. David Ernest, when people were they expressing a frustration, they have an understanding of what some of the challenges are. Did you see any indication that the digital divide has an impact on people's decision on even where to live and where to do business?
Yeah, there was some evidence of that. We spoke to business leaders as well as ordinary citizens, and business leaders emphasized to us that when they talk to businesses about investments in local communities, almost invariably the first question is about broadband access. And the inability to provide broadband access in the capacity that businesses require has caused businesses to pass over various locations in South Dakota as possible business hubs. So it's clearly having an impact, and it clearly is causing a frustration and concern from the lowest level, such as I can't get a reliable signal in my house, to the highest level, which is we can't attract the investment that we need to make our economies grow.
Right. Robert McNabb, we talked a little bit about the shifting of the economy itself, and you know, ag is still the top industry, but there's some changes to what some other industries and diversification of that economy. But I'm wondering about precision ag, and really as agriculture evolves to be even more and more based on digital technology, what are some of the challenges in the ag industry for a digital divide?
Yes, what we've seen in South Dakota over the last 30 years is that agricultural productivity has increased, and a large part of that is due to the adoption of technology in agriculture. So farmers are now able to generate increased yields per acre, but also with decreased labor. So the volume and value of that output has been steadily increasing over time, but the employment in this sector has been declining. And so if we can look forward to the future, if they are able to use 5G or similar instruments that allow them to have internet access at reliable, capable speeds, then we would see what? We would see increases in productivity, but we'd also probably see a substitution of technology for labor. So whereas it used to be a farmer would have several people working a machine to till a field or take a crop out of a field, now that one farmer could do much of that by themselves, and that machine is guided by GPS. They know what topography is. They can have an idea of what to plant based upon futures markets around the world, because we're a much more connected economy. So the challenge then becomes, if agricultural employment is declining because you have adoption technology, increased productivity, what happens to those people? If they have economic opportunity where they live, they migrate.
Lori, if I could just jump in on this point.
Yeah.
You know, one comment we heard from a number of leaders in the agricultural industry that we spoke to was, in terms of the productivity gains to agricultural production, they're doing fine, and the technology is terrific. Where the margins matter, where it makes a difference to their profitability, is the timing of when they go to market. And their ability to make an informed decision about when to sell, when to contract for transport, really depends on their connectivity to global supply and demand. And they say they base these marketing decisions on the information they can receive thanks to their mobile broadband devices. So it's really intrinsic to their margins of profitability for their ability to have timely information to decide when to sell and when to transport.
It's a huge competitive disadvantage if you don't have access to that information. Interesting. Never really thought of it in that way. What's the impact of a study like this? And let's talk about some of the next stages. David Ernest, impact of a study like this, how is it used?
Well, these studies are typically used to start a conversation, and particularly to start a conversation with civic and political leaders here in South Dakota, but also in Washington, D.C. I noted the origins of this study were really about a conversation I had in D.C. And a number of the region's elected legislators in Congress have leadership positions relevant to this concern. Senator Thune is the number two. He's the majority whip in the Senate. Senator Grassley is the chair of the Finance Committee. These are both legislators who have authority to look into policy solutions to these challenges. So we really look at using this study as the beginning of a conversation with our elected officials about what policies, if any, we can do to address the divide.
And where do we begin with that, Dr. McNabb? Is it a regulation and infrastructure investment? What are some of those policy solutions that are part of that conversation?
Yes to all of the above. And this is I'd like to echo David's point that this is a federal and state and local conversation, that there's an increasing awareness not only in South Dakota, but also, for example, here in Virginia, that if you do not address the urban digital divide and leverage these emerging 5G technology, you are only increasing the incentive for individuals to migrate to where economic opportunities reside. And that that part is explained by the density of broadband services in urban, ex-urban areas. So it is a part of a conversation, and then we have to think about how do we incentivize the rollout of 5G in the United States, because one of the most interesting things from our perspective in terms of 5G is that it will create broadband-like speed and capacity in your mobile device, so that in many cases individuals may find themselves consolidating away from fiber and other items towards just having one type of a device to access the internet, for example their phone, and then running their broadband access through their phone, whether that's for a TV or a computer. Over the coming decade, we would expect that evolution to increase.
Okay, so articulate the difference between 5G and broadband so people can understand exactly what the difference is. Yeah.
Sure. And broadband typically is thought of, and we refer to this in the report as fixed line broadband, is that if you have a cable in the ground and that cable is running from a node, a station in your neighborhood, then every house has a line that comes to it, fiber, copper, etc., that carries the data to and from your house. With regards to 5G, 5G is a mobile technology that will upgrade mobile networks globally to a new standard that allows much faster data transmission speeds. So if you're on your phone now, you could think that what services I get on my phone will increase it not only in speed, but also in their ability. So I'm able to do much more through my phone or tablet or computer connected to 5G mobily that I cannot do now, because either I don't have that capacity at my house or business because of coverage gaps, or I can't afford it. So we would expect, because you have another competitor entering into the landscape of broadband access, that entire access to the internet, that this would result in greater competition amongst people who are either providing fixed broadband investment and fixed broadband services and mobile broadband services. Hmm.
David Ernest, let's close with this. And we mentioned policy solutions. We mentioned Washington a couple of times. And we mentioned this word divide. And everybody's talking about sort of a divided nation. But one of the things, when we've talked about this topic before on this program, we hear from people in rural South Dakota that by not having this technology, it adds to a sense of invisibility and also political and civic engagement and not being heard. So there are political and civic implications to this digital divide as well, aren't there?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. And of course, when we talk about a divided nation, typically we're focusing on partisan divides between Republican and Democrat. But this isn't a party issue. This is, as you noted, more of an issue of the divide between the urban areas of the country and the rural areas of the country. And because of that, I think there actually are opportunities for political coalitions of Republicans and Democrats to address this issue, because this is an issue in every state of the union, because every state has rural areas that are lacking these technologies and this broadband. So there are Democrats and Republicans at all levels who share interests in finding solutions to this problem. Mm.
David Ernest is Odine Swanson Distinguished Professor of Political Science and Director of the W.O. Farber Center for Civic Leadership. He joined us from the SDPB studios in Vermilion. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Dr. Robert McNabb is Professor of Economics at Old Dominion University, and he's Director of the Dragas Center for Economic Analysis and Policy. Robert, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you for the opportunity.